Is it a gadget? Is it a gizmo? No, it's Gadgets and Gizmos with Steve Kaplan and Simon Rose.
So what do you have for us today? I'm a gog.
You're what?
I'm a gog.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. You can get that treated now, you know. It is the 120th show.
Wow.
I just thought I'd mention that, seeing as it is the 120th show. And I'm talking about roaming charges. As everyone listening will know, roaming charges in Europe were lifted last month, back in June, which means you can now use your minutes, your text, and above all, your data in Europe as much as you want or as much as you do here.
Which is quite useful because you have to check with your operator at the moment or before to see what charges you were going to get. And sometimes you have to be really careful because charges could be quite
absolutely
high.
Absolutely punitive, yes. Incredibly high. For no good reason at all. Absolutely no reason at all. So that is now, apart from the fact they will make a lot of money out of it, I suppose that's quite a good reason if you're a phone company. So I thought we'd talk a bit about what you can do with that data, and let's start by talking about how you can get more of it. So there are some very, very good deals on data at the moment. It used to be that data was a very expensive thing to buy on your
yes.
phone. And some people, I don't know, they still do it. You used to be able to get all-you-can-eat data deals. My son's iPhone contract that I set him up with 4 years ago, I think, was with Three, and that's all you can eat data. So he can literally watch YouTube all day and all night. And
well, I have exactly the opposite sort of contract because I threatened to leave Virgin Mobile. I can only get 1 gigabyte a month, I think, which I almost always get pretty close to that, but I do have a very inexpensive contract.
Right. How inexpensive is very inexpensive?
£6.
That's very inexpensive.
I know.
Yes.
I know. So I feel I should find some other way, you know, find a Wi-Fi hotspot or something if I want to actually go more.
Well, my contract that I've recently re-signed with O2 is £21 a month. And that gives me not only all my minutes, unlimited minutes, but 20 gigabytes. Which is
a lot.
Why would I want 20 gigabytes of data? Well, I'll tell you, because for an extra pound a month...
You've gone into that thing my professor at college had of asking the question, then answering immediately. OK.
It was a rhetorical question.
Okay.
No, well, I didn't expect you to actually go on that. You tell me, why would I want 21
pounds
worth of 20
gigabytes? No, I asked the questions. I'm the interviewer. Why would you want that much data?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Because for an extra pound a month, I get a second SIM card, which I can put in my iPad, and I can then share the data between the two devices.
Oh.
And that's a relatively new thing. And that's a very good thing.
Because at the moment, I have a different contract for my iPad, because I only need it for data when I'm out and about, and a different one for my phone.
Yeah, that's right.
Phone.
That's right. So you're paying for two contracts, when in fact, you could get it all onto one. So that's absolutely worth looking at. So I know O2 do this. I don't know if other providers do this. But it's a very convenient way of doing it, because that if you want to watch a movie, and you know that's going to take up 300 megabytes or whatever, then you'll know that that's allocated for that. But if you're not, then you can spend more time on your phone browsing Wikipedia.
Now you will know the answer to this, I feel, but it's quite useful for people to know how much data. You mentioned there 300 megabytes for a movie, but when you look at something like the iPlayer, it doesn't really tell you how much data you're going to need to watch a particular thing. Obviously,
no, it doesn't.
HD is more data intensive than standard definition.
Yes.
But what should people think about before they actually try watching a feature-length film, because many people won't be on these generous contracts and they don't want to suddenly find they're eating up data their plan.
If you go onto the iPlayer and you go to choose a program, if you before you listen to it, it actually does tell you how big it is, how much data it will use.
Oh, does it? I couldn't find that the other day. Okay.
If you go to the download section, that's where it'll tell you how much data it will use to download it.
Okay. And that's the same as if you stream it.
That's the same as if you stream
it,
exactly, yes. So, an episode of Game of Thrones, you're looking at 250, 300 megabytes, maybe.
Okay.
Which is it's quite a lot.
More in high definition, presumably.
Yes, more in high definition. I don't recommend you watch it in high definition. It'll just
chew up your data. Phone.
Well, especially over the airwaves, because you need a very, very, very fast connection in order to get that.
Okay.
So we wouldn't really want to do that. So what can you do with all that data? Well, you can now use things like Waze and Google Maps are finding your way around. And it's nice to be able to do that without having to worry about data.
Yes, because in fact you recommended Waze in an earlier programme as being very good for spotting traffic problems. And, yeah. I use Waze, and if I have too many journeys a month, that causes problems for me because suddenly I find that I'm getting up towards my data limit.
That's right. Well, in that case, maybe you should use Google Maps instead. Google, of course, own Waze, which is a little curious because the Google Maps isn't quite as good as Waze, and it does use a slightly different algorithm for working out the best routes. Because with Google Maps, you can download your a specific area.
Yes, I've done that when I've been skiing before.
And that's very useful. So when you've got Wi-Fi, when you've got pledge data available, you just download where you want to go. And then when you get there, it doesn't have to reload the map every time. So that is also extremely useful. It's also worth having a look at the mobile Wikipedia, which now has a places section in it, which will show you places of interest on Wikipedia in the proximity of where you currently are. And if you're on holiday somewhere, that's actually really very, very useful. You can see.
Yes, there was a wiki app that used to do that, and then it suddenly stopped working on my phone about 3 years ago. I can't remember. Yeah. It was called WikiHood, I think it was called.
That's right, WikiHood. And then it stopped. Well, they stopped developing it,
yeah,
I think. But now all that. I mean, there have been loads of Wikipedia alternatives, but frankly, the Wikipedia app is getting better all the time. Mm. And this feature is really nice, that it does show you on a map everywhere around your location, and you can easily tap on the.
And is that quite data intensive then?
No, because it's mainly text with small images. Mm. It's all optimized for mobile, so that's fine. Be aware that some websites can chew up a lot of data. So I have a friend who's developing a travel site at the moment, and he showed me it, and I said, well, that's a lot of pictures there. If people are travelling and they're going to be browsing. And he said, yeah, well, he was told that the maximum limit is 5 megabytes a page. 5 megabytes a page is an awful lot of data just for one page.
Yes.
Plus, of course, the
real
problem. So
you've made him feel really miserable, realising he was going to have to start all over again.
I suggested that he might produce a mobile version of the site with much smaller images, because that's really going to annoy people otherwise. The real problem with browsing websites is not so much the sites themselves, but the advertising. Because ads, they have animations in them. A lot of them have, have movies, they have speech, they have music, they have little games built into them. And they can add greatly. And it's because of this advertising that people like Apple allowed ad blockers to appear in the App Store, so you can use them on iPhones, and why Google are now developing their own ad blocker.
We discussed that before.
Yeah, because people resent the fact that they're paying the advertisers to give them information that they don't want and using up their allowance.
So you can download ad blockers from the Apple Store?
Yes.
Have you downloaded one, or you're not bothered?
I did download one, and I use it only for intrusive ads, for fairly pop-ups, that kind of thing. Mm. But no, advertising I see as part of your contract, your unwritten contract, with the site that you're visiting. You go to a website, you get the information, they give it all to you for free. Your side of the bargain is that you at least glance at the ads. Mm. And I think to use ad blockers, how are they going to get funded without the advertising?
Mm.
So I think people have something of a duty to not block the ads routinely.
Okay,
so
enough.
When you're out and about, you can still listen to the radio, because the BBC iPlayer radio works throughout the world now.
Oh, because as people who've gone abroad will know, if you try logging on to iPlayer abroad to watch any visual material, you probably won't be able to do it. Even in France, it's quite difficult. And at the same time, if you want to watch Netflix abroad or Amazon, you find that in certain countries it won't let you watch certain things.
No, that's absolutely right. So that's why you need something like Tunnel Bear. We've talked about Tunnel Bear before.
I couldn't get it to work properly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I tried, and I seemed to be eating up data without actually getting anywhere.
Okay, well...
Tunnel Bear first, so people know what it is.
It's an app for phones and tablets, and it creates a virtual private network. So it tunnels from where you are to where you want them to think you are. And it's a rather nice animation with a little bear tunnelling through the earth and popping up in the UK. So if you're on holiday anywhere in the world and you think you absolutely cannot miss the latest episode of EastEnders, then you can use Tunnel Bear. You download this free download. You get 500 megabytes free every month.
Mm.
That's not on top of your data plan, but that's 500 megabytes as funneled through the tunnel.
Right.
Which is enough to watch, an episode of an hour-long TV show, certainly.
Mm.
You can get unlimited data through them for £3.99 a month. So if you're going on holiday for a couple of weeks, I think it costs you slightly more if you're not signing up for long-term. Think, no, it actually doesn't. £3.99, and then you can watch everything you want, and you can make the BBC or Netflix or Amazon think you're in the UK.
Mm.
If you just want to listen to the radio, you don't need to do that. You can listen to the radio anywhere, and a 30-minute radio show will cost you about 22 megabytes, which isn't bad.
Yeah.
So you can listen to the radio, and of course through the iPlayer radio, which is a separate app to the iPlayer app, you can listen to anything whenever you want to. So yes, you don't need to be there.
So if you want to, as I know you will be following the test match, all the test matches,
yes,
seven of them
absolutely
throughout the summer, you'll be able to do that anywhere now for the same cost as if you were in the UK.
Do you actually listen to the test match on the radio?
Yeah, why?
I cannot imagine.
Why? Test match special, yes.
I find it hard enough to watch a game of cricket live, let alone listening to it without seeing... Where's the pleasure of listening to a game of cricket?
Well, I'd say I prefer listening to it. I have no option because I don't have Sky.
Did you used to play that game when you were a kid where you have five dice and you roll them and you get different scores? It was a cricket-based game.
Hexagonal things. How's that?
That's the one, yes.
I thought you might. Yes.
Yes. Enough said.
We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Gadgets and Gizmos with Steve Kaplan and Simon Rose. We've been roaming now around Europe, which is much cheaper. What are we going to do now?
Well, I'm going to ask you a question. How big is a kilogram?
Roughly 1,000 grams?
That's very good. That's a good answer.
Okay. When you say how much does it weigh? How much does it weigh? Okay, there's obviously a trick question here. I mean, a kilogram weighs a kilogram.
The thing is, that's the thing.
French have something in some museum somewhere that weighs exactly a kilogram, doesn't it?
No one knows exactly how much a kilogram weighs.
Do they know exactly how much?
The French, as you're talking about the international prototype of the kilogram, which since it's made of cylinders, it's made of platinum and iridium, and since 1879 it's been stored in a vault in Paris, and that is the world kilogram.
If it's been gathering dust, it will be getting heavier.
That's the problem.
What?
That
seriously?
Is precisely.
Oh,
the
I was
problem.
Trying to be flippant.
It gets dirty. Not so much dust, but you know, it they made it out of platinum and iridium so that it wouldn't corrode.
Mm-hmm.
But it just attracts particles from the air, and you know, any object does degrade. And in fact, if you go to Trafalgar Square, in the northeast corner, you'll see set into the wall measurements of a standard yard, foot and inch.
Mm.
And they are two brass bolts set exactly a yard, then a foot and an inch away. And this was the sort of UK standard, certainly during the 19th century and probably earlier. And people used to come along here and measure their yardsticks against
yes.
the yard. And you can see where the brass has got worn away by people measuring against it, so that the yard has grown incrementally over the years. So this standard kilogram, the problem is that it is getting heavier. There are 40 duplicates of this elsewhere in the world, mm-hmm. and they all weigh different amounts because they're all getting dirty at different rates.
And if people are only thinking about doing something like cooking, it probably doesn't matter. But presumably for more scientific purposes, it's
yes.
actually quite important to know what a kilogram is.
It's quite important. Well, the days of the international prototype of the kilogram may be numbered. And I can tell you the numbers exactly. The number is 6.62606993 times 10 to the minus 34. Because
that's how many it stays a numbered.
That's that is the new definition of the kilogram. It's now defined in terms of Planck's constant, which, as I'm sure you know, measures mass in relation to electromagnetic energy.
Wow. I thought the whole point of the metric system was it was supposed to be really quite easy.
Yes.
And once you get into 6.626069934 times 10 to the 34 joule seconds, it's getting a little bit complex.
10 to the minus 34.
Minus 34, sorry.
That's the important bit.
Yeah.
So it's a tiny amount. It has an uncertainty of 13 parts per billion. And 13 parts per billion is a very, 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 very low margin of error indeed. It took them 16
it's
months.
Roughly 13 parts per billion.
It is. So the way they got it is they measured the weight of this cylinder several times over 16 months. And then they sort of averaged out all the weights. And that's how they came down to this figure.
But
the definition of a kilogram.
What they're doing is measuring the heavier cylinder because when they first put it there, it would have been much lighter or slightly lighter.
I imagine that's true, but then it's possible that particles leave it as well as accruing to it.
Mm.
So I don't really know. But so now, if anyone in the world can simply work out exact weight of a kilogram using that 6.626069934 times 10 to the minus 34, if they get that wrong, then they're going to get something very large indeed.
Okay, so if I want to convert kilograms back to pounds, which I still tend to use as much as I possibly can... certainly when I'm weighing myself, I'm still multiplying by 2.2 roughly.
It's still 2.2. That'll still change.
Excellent.
Yes.
Then let us move on.
Let us.
And to what?
Well, when it goes dark, you probably draw the curtains. Or if you don't like curtains, you might pull your blinds
drawing.
Down. Yes,
sorry.
You pull your blinds, perhaps.
Yes.
Well, it could be that these days are again numbered, because...
There'll be a robot to do it. There'll be a robot coming along to draw my curtains for me.
I don't know if you have had the misfortune to be in hospital recently, but I was having my knee ministered to some time ago.
And just to people...
Oh, do we have to?
Yes. Basically, the lesson is don't walk along in Paris looking at Google Maps on your phone without checking if there is a chain strung in front of you first.
Very neatly put, thank you. And it was very embarrassing and quite painful. That came later. So, and when I was having the metalwork removed, I'm not going to go into any real surgical details here.
No.
But I was in a cubicle... in a hospital with glass walls.
Mm-hmm.
And when the surgeon came in to examine me, he pressed a button and the walls suddenly went opaque. They suddenly turned white.
Oh, you'd have been so excited.
I thought it was wonderful. And after he left, I spent some time playing
very
with the
sci-fi.
Button, turning on and off. It was fantastic, isn't it?
Yes. Mm. How does it work?
It works...
magic.
It works, uses electrochromic materials. They pass pass a small electric charge through it, and when they get the charge, they just switch from transparent to white.
That's very good.
Yes. But so researchers at Princeton University...
They could, of course, just use a curtain and pull it round, as they've always done in the past.
They could, but I wouldn't be talking about it if
no,
they had.
True.
So the researchers at Princeton have developed a smart window, which starts off transparent and then turns dark blue when you pass this current through it. The thing about this smart window is it's self-powered. So it's a transparent solar cell, which is made of, and I'm quoting here, contorted hexabenzocoronine. And the contorted hexabenzocoronine harvests UV energy from sunlight, mm-hmm. and then stores it. So it just runs itself. And their aim is to make this as a kind of film that you can then apply to your own windows. You can retrofit onto your windows, so you can make your dumb windows smart windows.
Okay. Though presumably there'll be some times when you actually want to be able to see through the window even at night, but presumably there'll be a way of adjusting it.
Yeah, well, you can turn it on and off.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is this the same system then that they used in the hospital?
It is a very similar system, except that it's solar powered. They've got a film of it on their website. It currently takes round about 30 seconds to change from clear to opaque.
Which is fine. What was the hospital one was instant, was it?
That was instant. Absolutely instant. It was wonderful.
They must have enjoyed watching you pressing the button again and again and again.
Very impressive. I believe you can get these things built into your house if you have the budget for it.
Almost as exciting as something we talked about a few months ago. Transparent wood, if you remember.
Transparent wood, yes.
Now, if only they could make wood transparent or not, depending on whether you wanted it to be transparent or not, how exciting that would be.
I'm sure it'll come.
So
it is, a Kickstarter time of the week. And I would like to recommend to you, I know you don't have a dog. I don't have a dog. But people who do have dogs, apparently the best activity you can do with a dog is throwing a ball for it.
Mm-hmm. And it's quite useful for children as well.
Yeah. Well, you throw a ball for the dog goes and fetches the ball. What could be better than that? A ball that talks to your phone via Bluetooth.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right.
What?
This is the Bringy, B-R-I-N-G-Y. And it is an app reporting ball. You throw the ball, the dog fetches the ball. It measures the dog's speed, how high it jumps, and the distance it has run. And it also lights up, and if you lose it, it has a little alarm in it which will beep, so you can find it again.
Well, being able to find balls that have got lost is quite
useful.
Assuming
it's no more than 10 metres away, because, of course, Bluetooth can't do more than 10 metres. But I suppose if your dog loses the ball, you know roughly which bit of shrubbery it's got lost in.
Quite useful for cricket matches, when you spend ages and nettles trying to find some
and
ball.
And you could measure the speed of your stroke, couldn't you? Stroke, do you call it
a
stroke?
Yeah, well, mine's never very fast. That would be pointless. But there are other people who would love to know how fast that cricket ball is travelling after hitting it, I guess. I suppose we can't really consider if this is a good idea or not because we don't have dogs.
People who have dogs,
and indeed most pets, tend to be quite daft into what they'll spend money on. I still can't. I mean, a dog, I don't suppose, really cares whether he's travelled a long way in a particular day or not.
No.
You can't share the information with your dog, or at least they probably
won't
understand it.
No, but the idea is that you can monitor your dog's fitness. Should you wish to do so. I mean, you can tell if a dog's fit by whether it's running up and downstairs or just lying in front of the fire yawning.
Well, this isn't the silliest smart thing we've had.
It's not.
By a long way.
$50, that's about £38. You have until the 22nd of July to make up your mind. Mm. Yeah, I should consult your dog first.
Mm. What was this being the silliest smart thing? Was that the hairbrush, do you think?
I think the silliest smart thing was possibly the home urinal. That didn't achieve its funding goal.
Oh, did that? odd that.
It's surprising, isn't it?
Yes, they were taking the mickey, weren't they? We've probably got time for one more thing.
Well, I'm going to tell you about an app that I've been playing recently. You remember The Room, which is a tablet phone app immensely, and
yes.
Room version 2 and The Room 3, indeed. And they've
got a 3 now.
Oh, yes, we talked about it when it came out.
Oh, did they? Well, I must have played it then. Okay.
There is another app very much in the same mould called The House of Da Vinci, in which you labour through a number of puzzles in Da Vinci-like constructions. The idea is you've gone to his house and he's had to flee the attentions of the church. It is a vast, hugely entertaining, difficult puzzle game. There are hints all the way through it. Should you need them, you almost certainly will. £4.99 on iOS or Android. You can also get it on the PC and on the Mac. If you have a tablet, I strongly recommend you get it because it is so much fun to play. It will keep you going for hours and hours.
This is the worry, of course, because I then sort of find that my life has gone. It's almost the same as listening to Test Match Cricket.
Yes.
Days go by.
But you could do them both at the same time.
Yeah, I'm not sure I could cope with that.
Okay.
Too much excitement.
It's a gorgeous-looking game. The mechanics are simply beautiful.
The House of Da Vinci. And just go to the Kickstarter and you'll find the...
No. You go to...
It
started as a Kickstarter project, incidentally, back in 2016.
Ah, right. Okay.
But, you go to the App Store.
Steve Kaplan, thank you very much indeed.
Is it a gadget? Is it a gizmo? No, it's Gadgets and Gizmos with Steve Kaplan and Simon Rose.